Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 217 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. This week, we have a return guest. He hasn't actually been on in quite a while, but we were able to get him back on after pestering him for a couple months. So he finally said yes to us again. So we definitely appreciate it. He's a senior writer and columnist for BoxingScene.com. Keith Idick joins the Last Round this week. Thank you again for joining us, Keith.
My pleasure, guys. Glad to be on.
Thank you. So let's just jump right back into it. To fight reviews this past Saturday, the 15th of April, from the Copper Box Arena in London on BT Sport and ESPN Plus in the United States. Jili Zhang gets the upset TKO in the sixth round over Joe Joyce and gives Joe Joyce his first career professional loss. Zhang is now the WBO interim heavyweight champion of the world. All right, Keith, what was your reaction to that?
You know, I really wasn't surprised, guys. And the reason I say that is because Jili is trained in New Jersey, in northern New Jersey, and lived here for almost 10 years now. And, you know, way back when Lou Duva and his son, you know, were prominently involved in his career, and I knew Lou for a very long time. I was close to him. And he always told me that he thought Jili would be a heavyweight champion. He said he had that kind of ability. And he always felt that he would get to that point. They thought it would happen sooner than now. And of course, he's only an interim champion at this point, but they felt that he had that type of ability. He was an Olympic silver medalist in 2008. They really had high hopes for him when they brought him here. So just in that sense, I wasn't really surprised because, you know, Joe Joyce, as you guys well know, gets hit with everything. I mean, he's perhaps the worst defensive fighter at the elite level that any of us might have ever seen. And he just, you know, he walked through a lot. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way against Joe. I mean, Joe's a nice guy and he's very tough, and he really ascended to the top of the division, but he doesn't move his head at all. And Jili is such a precise puncher and really a lot better, I think, than a lot of people gave him credit for being. I wasn't overly surprised that happened yesterday. And I thought the odds were out of whack because Joe Joyce was minus 900 on most gambling websites. I was pretty surprised by that as well. Jili was like plus 600, and he had given Filip Hrgović such a difficult fight his last time out. I said, man, this kind of seems a little wacky, and it's, you know, it played out that way.
Keith, so you touched on right now how obviously we know and our listeners know how Joe Joyce gets hit with a lot of shots, but he's able to just walk through them and eventually, at least up until this past Saturday, get to the victory. Did you think eventually he was just going to run into somebody that, you know, taking those shots was just going to be too much for him?
Yeah. And frankly, I thought it would happen before now. I was surprised that he was able to do it for 15 fights. And, a lot of people, of course, thought that Daniel Dubois was going to beat him. That didn't come close to happening. I didn't think Joseph Parker was going to beat him. But, yeah, I mean, he's just so deficient defensively. Even with the type of chin that he has, and look, he had been knocked out in the amateurs. It's not like he had shown this granite chin and never been down in the amateurs or even knocked out by Sergey Kuzmin. So, you know, I'm just not surprised. What I was surprised at is that they made this type of matchmaking mistake because there was frankly no reason other than Jili being left-handed. There was no reason to fight him. Of course, they looked at it like, okay, well, he doesn't really fight like Alexander Usyk all that much. He's bigger and heavier and fights in a different way for the most part, but they were left-handed. So they kind of saw it, or Joe Joyce did anyway, and what he was saying before the fight, as sort of a dress rehearsal for when he would fight Alexander Usyk. But of course, you fight a guy who can crack like that. And again, had fought very well against Filip Hrgović. A lot of people thought that he beat Hrgović in that fight. So, you know, I was just surprised that they did that. Now they have Jili under contract. Kingsbury Promotions has him under contract. So, of course, they did the right thing in that sense. But I thought it was a very, very risky fight going into it. And I don't quite understand why they did it. And of course now, you know, they're paying the consequences of it because Joe Joyce was really in position to fight Tyson Fury over the summer or, you know, worst case scenario, wait out Oleksandr Usyk's next two mandatory defenses. And if he continued winning, fight him. He was in a great position. And I know he has a rematch clause and he can take the rematch immediately if he sees fit. I don't see the fight playing out all that differently. Now, he might not have a swollen eye the way that he did, but he's not going to make the defensive improvements that I would think he would need to make to beat him.
Are you a betting man, Keith? Did you jump on those odds?
No, I try not to bet on boxing because I feel, I don't know, that journalist in me, I kind of feel bad about it. I did tell a couple of my friends, though. I said, hey, look, this is a little out of whack at plus 600, you know? So, but yeah, hopefully some people, as an aside, this has nothing to do with this fight, but the previous week I thought the Brian Mendoza, Sebastian Fundora odds were way out of whack. He was minus 1100. Mendoza's coming off. Jason Rosario had been knocked out three times before that, but that was a very impressive win from Brian Mendoza. And he was riding a high, and Fundora is again, a very defensively deficient fighter. So 2 weeks in a row, we've had some really big upsets in terms of what the odds were going into the fights.
Absolutely. Yeah. And somebody for somebody like Joyce, Keith, you know, I think he's in his late 30s. I believe he's 37. Zhang is 39. So they're both, you know, old on the older side in terms of the fight game. For somebody like Joyce, focusing on Joyce first, how much do you think this loss kind of hurts the trajectory of him getting one of those bigger names in the heavyweight division?
Yeah, it really destroys it, to be honest, guys. I mean, because he was in such prime position to get a major fight and a major payday. Because he'd have to beat Jalei, you know, in their rematch to regain the title and put himself back in that mandatory position. It really destroyed everything that he worked for in 5+ rounds last night. And again, I don't quite know why they took a fight of that difficulty against a southpaw who could punch. Jalei's older, he's 30, like you said, he's 39, but I thought he had proven himself, particularly in his last fight, and it just seemed like a silly risk to me.
I mean, if you know, it's playing matchmaker here, Keith, if you were on Joe Joyce's team or on his promotional team, who's a southpaw besides Zhang who you could possibly put him in there with?
Well, that's a great question because that's, again, what they were trying to do, to get ready for Usyk. And he had fought one southpaw as a professional. It was in his fourth professional fight, so that 11, 12 fights ago. So I understand why they wanted to – there aren't that many of them, right, particularly at the top level. So they probably looked at this like as a fight that he could win, that they probably said, yeah, this guy is almost 40 years old. You know, sometimes he has faded and toward the end of his fights. But when I went to see him train in the gym, it was probably about a weekend and maybe 11, 12 days before the fight. It was just before they left for London. And he looked to me, and again, guys, he's someone I'm very familiar with. I had seen him train and spar in the gym many times since like 2014 or so. He looked different to me. He looked like he had done some strength and conditioning and maybe some of the real, real hard, grueling work that would rectify his problems in the later rounds of fights. He just looked like even though he was around the same weight, he looked like he was just different physically to me. And that's kind of, again, why I wasn't surprised that he pulled it off last night.
You think the rematch ends the same?
Unless Joe Joyce can make the defensive improvements that he has not been able to make in his first 15, 16 fights, I don't see how it goes all that differently. Unless Jalei doesn't train as hard or something, because he has faded in the second half of fights. And it happened a little bit in the Hrgović fight, not as much as maybe in some of his other, certainly in the Jerry Forrest fight, which is the memorable one. He had knocked him down three times in each of the first three rounds. And then there was something going on with his body in that fight, though, much different than just fading toward the, I mean, he looked like he was about to collapse from the fifth round on in that fight. But point being, unless he doesn't take the second fight as seriously because he won and combine that with Joe Joyce making the defensive improvements that he would need to make, I don't see the rematch going all that different. Maybe not a stoppage on a swollen eye, but I just think he, and he's more skillful than Joe. I mean, I think that was fairly obvious yesterday.
Do we know, was there any further damage to the eye that Joe Joyce received?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything what happened in terms of when he went to the hospital and everything. I have not heard anything about, it really could have been a fractured eye socket, the way it was. Sometimes that happens, but I haven't heard that that's the case. If that's the case, then I could see Gillet fighting Tyson Fury next, because obviously Queensbury Promotions has all of those guys. They're looking for an opponent for Tyson Fury in the summer for a stadium fight in the UK. And here is Gillet off of this huge win. It would be a perfect time to do that. So if Joe Joyce is injured, I would think he's going to need to take some time off. I mean, his eye was pretty badly bruised up and damaged. So, he would take a few months off at least before he could go back to train. But I have not heard that he has a fractured eye socket or anything like that. But short of that, I would expect him to be back in the fall sometime, maybe.
On my drive home, I was thinking about, if I was Joe Joyce's team and he was pretty convincingly beaten by Zili Zhang, I thought, who would I like to face? And I thought, both coming off losses, they faced each other in the Olympics, Tony Yoka.
I think what we've seen over the last year or so, I think he would beat Tony Yoka. But you're right. Some intrigue there because of their amateur history and everything. I think, that's a good point. But I just don't think that with everything that he lost last night, aside from just losing his first fight, everything he lost from a business standpoint last night, I don't see how they can do anything else unless Gillet winds up going and fighting Tyson Fury. I don't see how the Joe Joyce side can do anything else but fight him immediately, because if you let him go fight someone else and he loses, the fight goes away. No one cares. So he's in a position where he kind of, whether they have the confidence to think that they could beat him or not, he almost has to do it because time is not on his side. Certainly he's 37 years old. So that's a tough predicament for him to be in. But he did say, I'm sure you guys saw it, he did say after the fight last night, immediately after the fight, maybe I'll take an interim fight. But I just don't think from a business that makes even less sense than fighting Gillet to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I thought when he mentioned the interim. I was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, I don't know that, you're kind of older already. But do you see, irregardless of a rematch happening or not, or if there is an interim fight, can you see a rematch between Joyce and Dubois?
That's a good question. I don't think Dubois is going to beat Usyk, but if he did, well, then certainly you'd see it somewhere down the line. But I think if they're both coming off of losses or they both would have been beaten, Dubois would have been beaten a second time, and of course Joyce beaten the first time, I think there will always be interest domestically in that fight. That's always going to be a fight of intrigue because Dubois is still relatively young, and I don't know what to make of him at this point. I mean, he didn't look good in his fight against Kevin Lorena, and I know he suffered a knee injury and everything. But I didn't think he looked particularly good. Yeah, but that's always a fight I think that will interest the public in the UK in particular.
Kevin, I saw a stat on Twitter somewhere, and I have no idea if it's true. Could you know? I saw a stat that said that 15 million people tuned in from China early morning to watch that fight. Do you know if that's true or not?
I don't know that, but I'm going to try to find that out because I know his Gillet's team, and it was on pay per view in China, but I think went off somewhere around 5 in the morning or something like it was, it was very early in the morning. It was on this new app in China called, I forgot what it was called, but I think it only cost the equivalent of maybe $1 or $2 US dollars. So it was pay-per-view, but not what we traditionally think of pay-per-view. It was very cheap. And his previous fight, 40 million people had seen it, I believe, against Hrgović. They said roughly 40, I don't know where these figures are coming from exactly, but they estimated that 40 million people saw the fight. And I know in the past, the Chinese people have gotten, boxing is not all that popular in China, but they have gotten behind, Zhao Shiming and a couple other Chinese fighters who have done pretty well, Zhu Kan, a couple of those guys, and they've gotten behind them. And Gillet and Meng Fanlong, who was his Olympic teammate, and they came over here together, a light heavyweight contender. They had built up somewhat of a following over there. But they're usually supportive of guys, even in a sport like boxing where it's not all that popular. They are supportive of Chinese people, trying to do anything in the sporting world. But that's an interesting, that's interesting. Because you can tap into that market. There just aren't a lot of Chinese fighters, though, because it looked like going to change at some point, particularly from with this group of guys, because there were three other guys that came here with Zhile and with Meng Fanlong to from China to the U.S. And the Chinese government was subsidizing them living and training here at one point. So it looked like maybe there was going to be a movement, a boxing movement to some degree in China, and it really hasn't happened. But if you have a heavyweight champion from China, I think they're going to get behind him. You know?
Just to put it into perspective, 15 million supposedly, population of China, 1.4 billion.
Yeah, think we have a lot of people in the U.S., right?
Exactly. Keith, have you ever covered a fight in China? Did you go to did you cover the Pacquiao Rios or anything like that?
No, I did not. No, they offered some, you know, media packages and such, but we just couldn't do it. I mean, we didn't take them up on it because it was kind of like a conflict of interest to kind of go over on a jet that was paid for by Top Rank and all that kind of stuff. We didn't go.
Japan?
What's that?
Have you ever covered in Japan?
No, I'd love to, though. I mean, especially Inoue. That would be, Inoue Fulton would be a fun one to cover over there because he's such a big star.
Because the reason I asked that, and, you know, obviously you haven't covered physically, but you've seen a lot of fights and with the fan bases over there. What would you describe as the major differences between, let's just say, American fans or even UK fans and, Chinese and Japanese fans to their fighters, their athletes over there?
They don't seem to get too rowdy, do they? They kind of just they're quiet during the fights. There's polite applause, and I guess when the result of the fight is either announced or there's a knockout or something, they cheer then. But during the fight itself, they're pretty quiet. It's almost like they're at the library to some degree. they don't really get all amped up about the fight. But I think that's more that's the way their culture is, though. I think they're very. I don't know how much you guys have interviewed either Japanese or Chinese fighters. Like, you can't get them to talk trash or anything. You know, you can't get them to say all that much negative about their opponents. It's just not in their culture, and they find it to be disrespectful. And I think maybe that must be the way that they go about it when they attend the sporting events, because I have noticed it's almost like there's nothing happening in front of them. They're not reacting in any way to what, and boxing is a pretty exciting sport to watch live, and they don't really seem to get too amped up about it. Mm.
Going back to Joe Joy's one final thing, Keith, what do you see as the hypothetical timeline? Let's just say he takes the rematch. He's able to get the victory in the rematch. Ideally, maybe 2024, 2025. When would you see him getting a bigger name, maybe an AJ, a Tyson Fury, a Usyk? When would you see it?
You know, even if he doesn't regain the title from Zhile, even if he doesn't win the rematch, I think he could wind up fighting Joshua, because they'll see him as damaged goods or someone who's beatable. Whereas before, I said, I don't really see Joshua, because it had been mentioned several times that he could be an opponent for Joshua, a nice domestic fight and all that. And I didn't see it happening. But if he were to lose, particularly to lose back-to-back fights, they might eventually fight him. But if he wins, he's... assuming the mandatory position is transferable, and I never quite understood that, because that is what happened with Dillian White, who wound up getting his WBC mandatory shot despite getting knocked unconscious in a fight by Povetkin. If it is transferable and he wins back the interim title, if it happens within the next 6 months or so, I guess he wouldn't be all that much off course than he was, because the other two mandatories are due before the WBO. So let's just say Usyk fights Dubois and wins. Maybe he would wind up fighting Fury in between or something, and that would disrupt everything as well. But if he were to make back-to-back mandatory defenses, the next mandatory due would be Filip Hrgović. So if Dubois, Hrgović, and those fights are not going to happen within 2 or 3 months of each other. So maybe it doesn't – if he comes back and wins the rematch, which we can't discount entirely, if he does do that, maybe it doesn't disrupt his career as much as we think today, because he'll be 38 years old, but he'll have then avenged his only loss. And then he's just kind of waiting in line. And then, of course, they would be much smarter or much more careful about who they matched him with while they're waiting for whoever he would fight from the mandatory position.
In the co-main event, Denzel Bentley gets the first round KO over Kieran Smith for the British middleweight title. And also Michaela Mayer gets the 18th win of her career with a 10-round unanimous decision win over Lucy Wildheart, who takes the second loss of her career. This was for the vacant WBC interim lightweight title. For Michaela Mayer, Keith, obviously it seems like eventually, maybe sooner than later, we'll get the Bumgarner rematch. Do you see that ending the same way with Bumgarner coming out on top?
I actually don't think Alicia Bumgarner is ever going to fight her again. But I just think she feels like she beat her. It wasn't decisive, of course. It was a split decision, and it was a very close fight. But I think she feels like she's got one up on her, and she knows that it eats at Michaela Mayer, and I don't think she's going to fight her again. And I think she sees it where maybe, you know, of course, it depends on what happens with Chantel Cameron and Katie Taylor and all. I think she maybe sees herself fighting, if Taylor comes back to lightweight, fighting her at some point. You know, they're all under the same promotional umbrella and everything. So I think that's what Baumgartner is going to do. I think she's going to pursue those types of fights and not, unless she, you know, if Michaela Mayer does damage in the lightweight division and it's a unification fight, if the titles get fractured or something, maybe then. But I don't think she's going to fight her willingly again. And I don't mean she's like afraid to fight her or anything. I just think she's gotten the satisfaction of beating her, and she can go make a lot of money fighting someone like Katie Taylor. And I think that's what she's going to pursue.
Yeah. That seems very probable. Also, going up to fight preview this upcoming Saturday, the 22nd of April, from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, on Showtime pay-per-view, a fight that many boxing fans and a lot of casual fans have been waiting for quite a while. Gervonta Tank Davis, 28-0, goes up against King Ryan Garcia, 23-0. Both undefeated young fighters, essentially the next generation of this crop of fighters. All right, Keith, what do you think? What's your take on this fight?
I favor Gervonta Davis, as I think most people do. But Ryan Garcia is a very live underdog, guys. He's obviously got a great left hook, but his hand speed is tremendous. He's got power. He's bigger than Gervonta Davis. I don't know that the weight is going to make all that much of a difference, because he is capped at 10 pounds. The next day weigh-in caps him at 146. I don't think he's going to gain a ton of weight, because I don't think that'll help his cause all that much from the second weigh-in on Saturday morning until the time they enter the ring, which will probably be about 10 or 11 hours later. But he's a live underdog, though. I mean, he's not as proven as Gervonta Davis. He proved something about himself in that Luke Campbell fight by getting off the deck, regaining control of the fight, and then landing that hellacious left hook to the body that stopped Luke Campbell and basically sent him into retirement. But I favor Davis because his boxing IQ, I think, is probably the most underrated thing about him. You know, he tends to take his time, and he'll give away some rounds early, and he'll compute what he needs to see in front of him. And then he'll make the opponent make a mistake, which is exactly what he did against Rolly Romero. And he's done that against a lot of opponents. I think that's what he's going to try to do against Ryan Garcia. We haven't seen Ryan Garcia in this type of pressurized environment before. He has headline shows, but he's never been the headliner of a sold out arena in a pay-per-view fight, certainly of this magnitude. Now, Gervonta Davis hasn't been in a fight of this magnitude either. It's the biggest fight of his career too, but I think he's more proven under pressure. But again, I think he's a live underdog because the kid can really crack, and he's the one who pushed for this fight to happen. He kind of, for lack of better words, talked his way into it, right? Because Gervonta Davis didn't have to fight him. But he did enough talking, and the fight became big enough, and there was enough public interest in it that it's happening. And it's happening more because Ryan Garcia demanded it to happen than Gervonta Davis demanded for it to happen. So I do give him credit, and maybe they see something in Gervonta Davis that others haven't seen. And Joe Goosen is an X factor in this that can't be discounted, because he's a great trainer. He's a veteran trainer who has put together amazing, successful game plans in the past. And I would expect him to do that. Now it's up to Ryan Garcia to go execute it. And again, at this level, in this highly pressurized situation, we have not seen him do that. He hasn't had the chance to do it, so he hasn't proven it.
For, this is a catch weight of 136 pounds. You mentioned the rehydration clause for 146 for the following day. Obviously, every time details of a fight agreement like this come out, you know, fans start talking, you know, their criticisms, or, you know, there's a little debate about the whole situation, the business side, I guess. Does Davis deserve credit for this win if he beats him, even though he has, you know, obviously he's the A side, so he was able to put all these clauses in. Do you think that he deserves the absolute credit regardless of the catch weight, the rehydration clause and all that?
Yeah, I think he deserves credit. And I don't think he's doing anything that most fighters wouldn't do if they were the A side and could make people acquiesce to what they want. I mean, that's part of being the A side. That's part of being the proven ticket seller and the guy who's headlined and been the A side of pay-per-view events. I get the criticism to some extent too, but the flip side of it is he's already fought at 140 pounds. So he would have more of an argument maybe if he hadn't already fought and succeeded at 140 pounds, which he did against Mario Barrios, right? If he hadn't fought at 140, I think he would have a stronger argument for doing this, because you can't say, oh, well, he's too big and he's too – Mario Barrios is bigger than Ryan Garcia, so he's already fought someone who's big – not much bigger, but he's taller than him, and he was a 140-pounder for a very long time. So he has gone and beaten a 40-pounder. So I get the criticism to some extent, but I'm not going to discount his – because – the other thing, like I mentioned earlier, guys, he can, if he wants to be 155 pounds in the ring, he can do that. It's nothing. Now, it's not enough. It's not as much time as usual to add that type of weight. But Ryan Garcia said it in New York right after the press conference. He said, usually I'm not more than 148 or 149 in the ring anyway. Now, I don't know why he would lie about that, but that is what he said. So if that's the case, he certainly can be 148 or 150 or whatever he wants in the ring. So it's not really maybe I know why he's complaining publicly about it, because he wants Tank to take some criticism. I get it's all part of the showmanship, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a factor as some people are maybe making it out to be.
Heath, what are the stipulations on the rematch? Is it a rematch regardless or?
No, it's a one-sided rematch clause. And again, if you're the A side and Ryan Garcia really wants the fight, you either take these terms or you can go fight, Mercedo Hester or whoever they have for you at the zone, I guess is the way he looked at it. So if Gervonta Davis loses, he has the right to an immediate rematch. If Ryan Garcia loses, he does not have the right to a rematch ever. If you're a Ryan Garcia fan, you say, oh, that's not fair. That's not, but again, that's part of the business. And when you're the A side of the event, you dictate the terms. And Oscar De La Hoya did that for most of his career when, you know, he's Ryan's promoter and he knows what that's like. So to be in that position, to be in the driver's seat, if Ryan Garcia wins, of course, he's going to have to, I would assume Gervonta Davis would exercise the rematch clause and they would fight again, but he'll be in a great position. He'll have changed his career, changed his life, changed his legacy. So it's a great opportunity for him. And that's why, despite all the contractual terms being against him or against him, so to speak, that's why he agreed to everything, because he really wants this opportunity and he's confident that he's going to knock Gervonta Davis out. So he's got 12 rounds to figure that out on Saturday night. If he goes and does it, I mean, the kid's, you know, boxing's biggest star at this point.
Heath, I know you're not in Vegas yet. You said beforehand you're going to be Tuesday, but do you get those big fight feels for this fight?
Yeah, certainly from the ticket sales and all that kind of stuff. And there are people talking, you know, generally, guys, I'm sure you guys feel the same way. You know, I cover boxing for a living. You guys are immersed in boxing. Most people don't talk about boxing all that much. You know, you don't hear it from people who, you know, your friends, your family and everything, because it's not nearly as popular of a sport as it used to be. For this fight, you're hearing about it more from the mainstream. You know, Ryan Garcia has 9 million plus Instagram followers. And I don't know how that translates into buys necessarily, because you don't know how many of those are, you know, teenage girls and such, but he is very popular. I mean, he's got a footprint outside of the boxing space that most people don't have. He's in a Gatorade commercial with Damian Lillard. People know who he is. And the same goes for Gervonta Davis. He doesn't have quite as many Instagram followers, but I've been at every one of his fights where he either sold out the arena or came damn near close in a bunch of different cities. I mean, Gervonta Davis is a star as well. So people are aware of this fight. But I don't know. I'm working on a story for later this week. They'll run probably the day before the fight. I don't know if there's a million buy pay-per-view fight domestically that exists in the United States anymore, just because piracy is such where it won't allow it. The price point is very high. And, you know, younger people in particular are tech savvy enough to unfortunately go and steal the stream however they see fit. So when you merge all of those factors together, even two wildly popular guys like Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia fighting each other in a fight that people have wanted to see for several years, I don't think there's a 1 million buy fight left domestically in the U.S., which is not a great commentary on the health of the sport, I don't think, but I think that's true.
What would be a successful range for you, do you think, for this pay-per-view?
I think if they do between 500,000 and 600,000 buys in the United States, I think they'll be happy. I think, you know, it'd be a financial success, but they don't have to do 500 to break even, I don't think, but I think they would look at that successfully. But I've heard it as low as 350, which is not really all that much higher than Gervonta Davis's pay-per-view fights have done against Rolly Romero. It's higher, but it's not, you know, markedly higher, I don't think, than Rolly Romero and some of his other fights. I mean, so I would hope that Ryan Garcia, with everything he brings to the table from a popularity standpoint, that he brings more than 120,000 or 130,000 more buys to the fight with Gervonta Davis. Because again, if he doesn't, that's not a great commentary for the state of the sport.
And for perspective, Tyson Fury, Wilder did 700,000, 750, Keith, is that right?
Sometimes these numbers get inflated. I think the rematch did what it actually did, I think, was 850-ish, somewhere around there, 850, 860 or something, which is a lot of buys. But when you consider the amount of marketing muscle they put behind that fight, you know, remember, that was a joint pay-per-view fight between ESPN and Fox, and it was all over ESPN. It was all over Fox, all over FS1, which have great reach, those three channels. And they just promoted it, you know, on NFL playoff games and all that. It was everywhere. And people were stunned that it – look, I think the release number that at some point was put out was 1.2 million. That was still considered a failure, even though it was over, you know, supposedly over a million. It was still considered a failure because they invested so much in the marketing for the fight, and the fighters' purses were much higher than Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia's purses. So it was not considered – they did well at the gate for that fight as well. But and I think they're going to do amazingly well at the gate on Saturday night. But I just don't know how that's going to translate into pay-per-view buys.
The numbers are only sometimes inflated, Keith?
Depends on who you talk to, I guess. I mean, certain people that you talk to, the sky is always falling. Well, it would have crushed us by now if it was always falling to that degree, I guess. But yeah, I mean, you know, what they usually tell us, you know, it's going to come in at this range once all of the buys are tapped. Because sometimes when buys are coming in, sometimes it takes a while. Digitally, they're instantly available, but that's not the case from a linear perspective where you're getting from cable and satellite operators and stuff. Sometimes it does take a while to trickle in. But these days, the cable and satellite operators are selling a lot less of a percentage of the pay-per-views than they used to sell. A lot of it's digital now, much more so than it was even 4 or 5 years ago.
Keith, we talked about, or you mentioned about Ryan Garcia, for example, having, you know, 9-10 million followers on social media and all that combined. And, you know, he's obviously, they're both younger. Ryan's a couple years younger than Tank Davis. So the fans, you know, he's over the last couple of years, especially since he's exploded on the scene, he's been around influencers like the Paul brothers and other influencers. So obviously they have a certain fan base. It's a younger fan base, generational and all that. Which, like you touched on, the piracy, it's already been evident over the last several years in boxing. But that younger generation, who's a little bit more tech savvy than obviously the older generations, do you think that comes in as a factor for this Saturday's buy rate as well?
I do. Yeah. Because I think, you know, and plus younger people tend to have less disposable income. Now, if you have five or six people over your house or three or whatever, you can split up the cost and it's not nearly as expensive. But yeah, I think it is going to be a factor, and it's, you know, it's ravaging the pay-per-view business. And some boxing fans look at it like, well, there shouldn't be this many pay-per-view fights. And when there are pay-per-view fights, they shouldn't be this expensive. So they don't feel guilty about what is, whether they like it or not. It's breaking the law. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, but they feel like they're not doing something they shouldn't be doing because they shouldn't be gouged for pay-per-view fights, you know, every 6 weeks or whatever it is. But yeah, it's a weird, I don't want to play the moral police here or anything. It's weird, right? Because you see these people on social media and they're not identified by their real names or anything, but they're sort of bragging about stealing something, which is kind of an odd thing to brag about for a variety of reasons. But the short answer to your question is yes, it is going to impact the buy rate of this fight, and more so than it does other fights, because many more people are interested in buying this fight, which means many more people are going to steal it, unfortunately. And it's something that they have not been able to police properly. And again, it's really damaging to the business and might ruin the pay-per-view model just in general. Because if you look at some of the pay-per-view landscape, like Top Rank, which is doing they didn't want to put that fight. It just became too expensive to put Devin Haney and Lomachenko on ESPN, but they wanted to. They were trying to make that happen. And they haven't done a pay-per-view fight in the U.S. since discounting the Jake Paul, Tommy Fury thing, because they were kind of involved in that, but not really. But they haven't done a pay-per-view fight that's their promotion since Tyson Fury and Dillian White, which was just about a year ago. And they had to do that because the purses were $40 million combined. So they had to put that on pay-per-view in the U.S. in the middle of the afternoon and all. But they haven't done one since then, because they know that the model is broken, basically. And they've gotten the license fees from ESPN to put some pretty good fights that 15, 20 years ago would have been on pay-per-view. You know, they would have been fringe pay-per-view fights, but they would have been on pay-per-view. Like, you know, something like Shakur Stevenson and Oscar Valdez obviously doesn't belong on pay-per-view in today's day and age. But that type of fight would have been on pay-per-view in the old days, you know, $50, $60 or whatever the price might have been back then. But that level of fight would have been on pay-per-view, and it was on ESPN. And that's what needs to happen more, to put those better, that not turn out to be a good fight in the ring, because Shakur Stevenson is much better than Oscar Valdez, but it was a really good fight. And they put it on ESPN, and they've done that in other instances. And I think that's the trend that I think we're going to see moving forward.
Heath, do you think this fight has come at the right time for Ryan Garcia, or do you think it's come a little early? And the reason I say that is, it's quite a leap from probably who we would class as his best opponent so far.
It is a leap for sure. It's a gargantuan leap in class for him. But I don't know that they could have done anything for him from the Golden Boy side or from the DAZN side to really satisfy what he wants, you know, because he wants this big fight. So he didn't see any reason why he should continue fighting guys on the level of Javier Fortuna, to continue waiting for Gervonta Davis, if he could just push for the fight and make it happen, which is in effect what he did. So I admire his ambition. I don't know necessarily that he's ready for this type of fight, but we're going to find out Saturday night. And I give him a lot of credit for putting, because what do these young guys get? A lot of them get criticized for. They're on YouTube channels and social media saying they want to fight this guy, they want to fight that guy and that guy. And then they wind up fighting a much lower level of opponent. He himself had been criticized for that. And now he's, you can't criticize him anymore. I mean, how much harder of a fight could he have taken than what is awaiting him on Saturday night? So give him a ton of credit for that. And that's what this sport is about at some point. You got to find out what you're made of at some point. So why wait till 26 if you feel you're ready for it at 24? And look, if he gets knocked, let's just say he gets knocked out by Gervonta Davis on Saturday night. It's not the end of his career or anything like that. They'll rebuild him. He will have been in a huge fight. It's only going to make, you know, just being in this, an event of this magnitude is only going to make him more popular. And then, you know, he comes back with a softer touch in his next fight and then sees how he seems to me, or what he has said anyway, is he is not someone who wants to be a professional boxer at 37 years old or anything. So he's trying to make his money, take his shot and see what happens. And you can't blame him for that. And you have to give him a lot of credit for doing it.
Heath, going back to the whole pay-per-view thing, I don't know if you remember, but when Mayweather and Logan Paul had their exhibition fight, they had a type of model where for the pay-per-view buys is the earlier you purchased it, the cheaper it was. So as it got closer to the date, it obviously got a little bit more expensive. So if you bought it when they announced it, it was, I don't know, $25. And then if you bought it like the day of, it was, you know, maybe $75 or whatever the top out price was. Obviously, it's hard to police the piracy and all that. But I mean, like, can you see something like that ever coming back into the boxing pay-per-view fold? I mean, just to try something new?
It's a good idea. You know, you give people an incentive to buy earlier and lock them in. That's a good idea. I don't know that we'll see it, because I've asked these questions a lot, guys, to the powers that be about lowering the prices. Now, Top Rank has done that for the Vasily Lomachenko-Devin Haney fight. It's not cheap, but it's $59.99 in the U.S., but you have to have a subscription to ESPN Plus. So if you have that, it's $59.99. That's a starting point, I suppose. But I think lowering the price would definitely lessen piracy, I guess. But I think some people are still going to steal it. I mean, if you make it $50, there are still going to be a lot of people who steal it. They should lower that. $85 is a lot of money for one fight. And then it's not their fight, but there's another pay-per-view fight 2 weeks later with Canelo. And then there's another one 2 weeks after that. And there was one in late March. So there's four in a less than 2 month window. And frankly, I mean, if you're a fan of this sport, every time there's a fight that you, not that you don't want to see some of the other fights, but a fight that you really, really want to see, what are you going to pay, $80 or $75 or $70 every other week? I mean, who's built, what people with families are building boxing pay-per-views into their budget? You know, it's easy for someone who maybe doesn't have children, is a younger person or whatever, or has the disposable income to say, oh, well, stop complaining and just buy it. It's the price of being a boxing fan. I understand that to some extent, but I think there are too many pay-per-views in the U.S. and it's too expensive.
And then you mentioned Mercito Gesta, a Golden Boy fighter. Obviously, just came off of the biggest win of his career so far against Jojo Diaz. Gesta was the rumored opponent for Ryan Garcia in January, which was supposed to be an interim bout. Obviously, Ryan came out and said he didn't want an interim bout. It obviously didn't happen. Do you think that is going to come back and bite him? Do you think that Ryan should have had an interim bout, just like Tank Davis did in January as well?
I see it from both sides. I see where he was coming from. Now, look, I don't know this definitively, but I was told, you know, there was some gap in what he was looking to get paid for his quote unquote tune-up bout and what they were willing to pay him. So that might've had a role in that as well. But the fight would have been January 28th. It's relatively close to this less than 3 months out of when he was supposed to fight. Well, back then the fight was supposed to be April 15th. So it's, you know, 2.5 months. And look, if he gets cut or if he gets injured or whatever, then this payday goes away. So I get it from that perspective. You don't want to take a risk like that and cost yourself the biggest fight and the biggest payday of your life. But it, of course, has extended his layoff. He hasn't fought since July 16th. He looked very good against Javier Fortuna, as he should have. But he did fight a southpaw in his last fight, which helped prep him to fight it. Javier Fortuna ain't Gervonta Davis. We well know that. But he did fight a southpaw. You hope the rust isn't a factor, and it's basically nine months later. You would like for him to have fought in November or December or something, ideally. But I get why the business prevented him from fighting in between. And I think just not wanting to take that risk of getting hurt was probably the smartest thing to do.
We talked about how Davis, there's a one-sided rematch clause. Obviously, if Ryan wins, Davis has the option. Do you think that even if Davis wins, do you think that he still would want a rematch, just because it would, depending on how he wins, you know, if they go 9-10 rounds, it's a pretty decent fight, and then Davis catches him, knocks him out. Do you think Davis still considers a rematch just because it's another big money fight? It could be like a trilogy or a series like that.
I guess it would depend on what type of fight it is. Like you said, if it's a back and forth fight, you know, let's just say Gervonta Davis hit the canvas, you know, or something like that, and got off the deck and wins and knocks him out, and it's the type of fight that there would be a public demand for, maybe then. But otherwise, or if he won some sort of, I don't think it's going to go to the scorecards, but if it did and he won what was perceived as a controversial decision or something like that, maybe then. But I think if he wins, I think he'll just look for another challenge moving forward. Because you wouldn't have to fight him again, of course. But and you know what? That doesn't mean they couldn't fight again at some point. It just might not be next.
How would you categorize the differences and even similarities, if there's any, of Gervonta Davis's coach, Calvin Ford, and Ryan Garcia's coach in Joe Goosen?
You know, Joe's like an old school guy. You know what I mean? The thing about Joe, I think, that separates him from Calvin, and Calvin's done an amazing job with Gervonta Davis. He really has. But that's really his only fighter that he brought to the high level. And that's not a knock. I mean, that's just true. And he's done a great job helping save this kid's life, really. Forget about boxing, being a father figure to him and everything. But Joe's just much more of a proven strategist. Look what he's done throughout the course of his career and all the champions that he has trained. You know, Calvin deserves a lot of credit for Gervonta Davis. Gervonta Davis has a high boxing IQ, which I think he's getting more and more credit now for. But I think Calvin Davis deserves credit for cultivating that. I mean, he's been his trainer primarily for most of his life, or almost all of his life, and Kenny Ellis as well. I mean, they've trained him together for the most part. So they deserve a lot of credit for developing some of the nuance in Gervonta Davis's game. But I guess you'd have to favor Joe in the sense that he's a more proven trainer. He's had more world champions and he's been in the sport for a long time. But I think Gervonta Davis, frankly, being better than Ryan Garcia is going to nullify that. But, you know, I think they're both very good trainers, though. I mean, and we see this all the time, guys, where a guy, you know, will take, like, let's just say Calvin, for example. I'm not saying he couldn't train someone else to the top level, but, you know, oftentimes a guy might train one or two guys that get to the top level, and then that's pretty much it. You don't hear from them again for the most part. They might train some other guys, but they never get. The bottom line is it's the fighter more than it's the trainer. I mean, the trainer certainly has a lot to do with it. But if you have an elite level, you know, one of a kind talent, that's going to dictate how far you go as a trainer oftentimes.
How much improvement did you notice, if any, when Ryan Garcia was with Eddie Reynoso? Because obviously he was with them for a couple fights, and then that whole situation unfolded, and then he went with Joe Goosen over here in Los Angeles. Would you categorize it as a significant improvement in Ryan Garcia's talents under the tutelage of Eddie Reynoso?
Yeah, I think they got him to work harder than he was working before, and I think that improved his conditioning and therefore enabled him to do things during fights that he wasn't able to do before. So I think from that standpoint, they helped mold him more into a man than a boy, so to speak. I mean, he trained alongside Canelo, and I think he learned a lot from that. From a technical standpoint, he still makes some of the same mistakes that he's been making all along. I mean, his chin up in the air and these defensive flaws. But I think the thing that they made him train better for sure. And I know Joe is no one to play with when you're coming into the gym. He's all about business and everything. So I think he's doing similar things in that way. I think Ryan Garcia got frustrated because he felt like Eddie Reynoso was not able to dedicate enough of his time to him, because of course he has Canelo and he had Frank Sanchez and he had several fighters at high levels, Andy Ruiz, he had a bunch of guys, and he felt like he just didn't have enough time to train him. I think that's why it disintegrated more than anything. But I do think that he still makes technical mistakes, particularly defensively, that are going to cost him Saturday.
How do you see it playing out? You've already said that you think Davis wins, and you don't think this goes to the scorecard. So you think obviously it ends by some type of stoppage or knockout. Ideally, how do you see it happening?
Well, what I think will happen is Gervonta Davis will take his time, and he's not going to do anything stupid and run into anything stupid. I mean, I think he's really going to take a few rounds, maybe give away some rounds. I mean, I could see him maybe look. He was down on one of the scorecards against Rolly Romero, and Ryan Garcia is a better boxer than Rolly Romero probably. So I wouldn't be surprised maybe if he's down midway through the fight. And I see somewhere in that range is where he's going to wind up catching Ryan Garcia with somewhere between maybe 6 and 9, you know, I know it's pretty long range, but somewhere in that, I don't think he's going to knock him out in the third round or something like that. But I do think eventually he's going to catch him with a shot that he doesn't see, and maybe lead him into something, set a trap and knock him out.
Mike, how do you see it playing out?
Pretty much the exact same thing as what Keith said, to be honest with you. I think he'll take a few rounds, see what tendencies Ryan has, see what flaws he has, and then he'll set something up and take Ryan out. I think he'll probably do it in the later rounds, maybe let some of the sting get off Ryan's punches before he kind of like gets in close, just in case he does get caught. And then, yeah, I think he'll set a trap and he'll catch Ryan and, you know, he'll take him out in one of the later rounds.
Keith, do you think that, obviously with Davis being the smaller fighter, like, you know, Ryan Garcia is obviously a big lightweight. He's a very tall, long reach. And Davis is, you know, obviously shorter. Do you see any more focused body work for Davis against Ryan Garcia this Saturday night?
You would like to see it. I don't know if we will, but you would like to see it. You know, I would like him to go to the body more just in general. I'm not sure if Ryan Garcia is going to give him those openings to do that. But the other thing to take is Ryan Garcia is a pretty good body puncher. You know, is he going to be able to, of course, is he going to be able to get to Gervonta Davis's body is the question, but he's a pretty good body puncher. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting component to the fight too.
Keith, how do you think someone as famous and as, I mean, he's got his critics on social media, right, Ryan? How do you think someone like Ryan would take a defeat if it goes as we both have said?
It'll hurt, you know, it'll be his first loss. And of course it's a fight that he called for. And if he loses, it's going to be different. You know, like all fighters, they have egos and they've invested their whole lives into this and he's never tasted defeat as a professional. I'm sure it'll sting for a while. I think it matters how he loses, Michael, because look, if he somehow gets clipped in the second round or something, that's tough to get by, you know. It's not like he won't fight again, but that, from a mental standpoint and an emotional standpoint, that'll be difficult for him to get over. But if he goes in there and gives a great account of himself and it's a competitive fight and he winds up getting clipped later in the fight and gets knocked out, you know, I think he'll be able to know that he put forth a great effort and did maybe some of the things that he thought he could do against Gervonta Davis and be more proud of the effort in that way. So I think it really does depend on how he loses. If he were to lose, look, he's been through some difficult stuff. You know, I mean, he's been open about having some struggles mentally and emotionally, and you don't like to see people go through that. So it would be, you know, it'll be tough for him to overcome, but his family will be there for him and everything. And look, fighters lose. I mean, that's just, other than Floyd Mayweather for the most part, I mean, fighters lose and you have to deal with that reality at some point. And hopefully he'll be equipped to do it and bounce back, you know, stronger in his next fight.
And we talked about the ticket sales. So are we at an official sellout as of today?
The way it's been framed to me, it sold out the day that the tickets went on sale. The only thing is you don't know how many of these tickets went to ticket brokers. And, you know, of course, there's a limit to the amount of tickets you can buy. But the tickets supposedly are sold. Now, they're available all over on the secondary market. But we're talking, you know, some of these tickets are available for $19,000 for one ticket. I mean, that, you know, I don't know who's paying that, but somebody's got a lot of people, wealthy people that, you know, spend a lot of money on these things, but supposedly is sold out. I mean, T-Mobile Arena can hold at a maximum almost 22,000 people for boxing. I think that's what the announced attendance was for one of the Golovkin Canelo fights at T-Mobile. But it's a hot ticket, you know. I don't know if it's like a Taylor Swift ticket or something like that, but not that I would pay a lot of money to see Taylor Swift. But, you know, it in boxing terms, it's about as hot a ticket as you possibly could have at this point.
That could have been you, Keith, if you'd have followed your instincts and put money on Mendoza and Zhang, those $19,000 ringside tickets.
Well, thankfully, I get paid to sit there, so that's a pretty good deal. It's not bad, you know.
Keith, one final thing on the Davis Garcia event. What's your take on the whole marketing so far up until this point of the entire event?
Yeah, it's been good. I think, they're using social media a lot too, because it's pretty fitting for this fight, I guess, to use social media a lot to push the fight. It's been all, you know, it's on CBS Sports Network. It's on CBS, which of course is under the same corporate umbrella as Showtime. You know, the fight's out there, I think. I mean, you know, they've done a good job with the All Access series and everything. I think it's, you know, I have seen fights where there's been more marketing. The fight we referred to earlier in the podcast, the rematch between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder was all over the place, you know, and they really, I don't know if I've seen a marketing push for a fight, a pay-per-view fight like that in quite some time, you know, or maybe ever. But this fight's out there. I mean, it's all over the cable stations and everything. And even, you know, traditional outlets that ignore boxing for the most part now are sending multiple people to this fight, which, you know, that kind of speaks to the impact it's making in the mainstream. But again, guys, I know I said this earlier in the podcast. I mean, the days of a 1 million buy pay-per-view fight in the U.S., I don't know that that exists anymore.
Right. Yeah. Do you think that Golden Boy, or specifically Oscar De La Hoya, wanted this fight? Or do you think Ryan just had so much, I guess, power in himself and within Golden Boy, especially since Canelo leaving, Ryan's now the guy at Golden Boy Promotions? Because Oscar De La Hoya, just like even a couple of years ago, has been on video interviews with other, you know, boxing reporters, YouTube reporters, saying when they've asked him, hey, do you think he's ready for Tank? And he says, oh, no, he's not ready for Tank. He admits it freely. Do you think Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy as a whole feel that he's ready for this step?
Well, certainly they're saying that they feel he's ready for it, whether deep down that they do, who knows? But I think it's more that he pushed for the fight happening now as opposed to them pushing for the fight. They did help it across the finish line, like, you know, when they were having all these complications in the negotiations. I mean, they did make concessions that were necessary to get it across the finish line. They did do that. I deserve some credit for that, of course. But I think this is really Ryan Garcia pushing for this more than anyone else. If he weren't pushing for it as hard as he was, then we wouldn't be here this week. We wouldn't be talking about this fight happening Saturday.
Exactly. And also on the card, David Morrell, 8-0, goes up against Senna Akbeko, 27-2, for the WBA super middleweight title. What's your take overall on Morrell?
I think Morrell is an elite level talent, despite that he only has 8 fights. I think he'll beat Falcao on Saturday night, but I think he would have beaten Akbeko, who was coming off a very good win against Isaiah Steen on Showbox. I think he'll beat Falcao, you know, just as handily for the most part. And I think then he's in position to potentially fight David Morrell next. I think that's a fight internally within PBC they're seriously discussing happening. I think Benavidez feels like he'll beat Morrell. I think Morrell feels like he'll beat Benavidez. Morrell only has 8 fights, and this is a good way to showcase him maybe to more people so they're aware of him more going into a pay-per-view fight. He's in the co-main event. I think that's part of why he's in the co-main event, to get him greater exposure and more notoriety. But I think, you know, he wins this fight on Saturday night the way I'm expecting him to. You know, he's ready for anybody. I mean, the kid is, he's a phenomenal talent. I mean, he's strong, fast, athletic. He's tall. He's smart. You know, he probably fights a little bit more sometimes than Ronnie Shields wants him to fight, you know, when he should be boxing. But he's pretty damn near close to the whole package in the super middleweight division. And I think him against David Benavidez is an excellent fight.
So you think even after only having 8 fights professionally, let's just say he wins on Saturday and gets the 9th professional victory of his career, you think he's ready for those elite level guys at 168 pounds?
I do, because I think some guys are just built differently, you know, with their amateur pedigree, and they're just more advanced than other guys. Like Lomachenko was like that. Now, should he have fought Salido in his second fight? Well, as it turns out, probably not, because he lost, but he also got hit below the belt 47 times. But he fought a world champion in his second fight. I think Morrell has that kind of ability. Now, he's not being marketed the way that Lomachenko was. Like, you know, Bob Arum was calling him the next Muhammad, all the crazy things that Bob was saying about Vasily Lomachenko. They're not doing that necessarily with Morrell, but I do think he's advanced in that way. And he's ready to fight anyone. Now, I'm not saying he would beat Canelo if they fought tomorrow, or that he'll definitely beat Benavidez, but I think he's ready for those fights. I don't think if he loses those fights, I don't think people realistically could come away from it saying, well, he wasn't ready for it. You know, it might just turn out to be that Benavidez is better than him, or Canelo. Canelo fight's not going to happen anytime soon, but you know, those guys might just be better than him, but I don't think it's because he's not equipped to be in the ring with them at that point.
Also on the card, Beck the Bully in a rematch goes up against Gabe Rosado. Obviously, Keith, we know that in their first matchup, I don't know if it was last year or 2021, but Rosado caught him it seems like he was backing up going into that corner, and then Rosado just got him with that hook and got the upset knockout there. Can we see that again, or do you think Beck the Bully is the favorite here?
That was a damn near perfect shot by Gabe Rosado, and you know, he hasn't been quite successful since then. Of course, that was, I think, June 2021 when that happened, and that came out of nowhere. It was one of the knockout of the year, according to, you know, some outlets. And it wouldn't have happened if Gilberto Ramirez didn't come in at, like, you know, 308 pounds or whatever he was before he was supposed to fight Gabe Rosado. I mean, he was damn near a heavyweight the day before the weigh-in, and they had to cancel the fight. So, you know, this wouldn't be happening, because I don't really think Gabe wanted to give Beck the Bully the rematch. I just think he was in position where he was in shape. He was looking for, you know, he wanted to get another payday out of his career, and he's done amazingly well for a guy with 14 losses or whatever he has. I mean, he's fought everyone. I mean, Gabe Rosado, I mean, look at his record and see all the type of people that he fought Golovkin. I mean, he got beat up by Golovkin 10 years ago, and he's in a relevant fight on a pay-per-view undercard on Saturday night against a guy who he knocked unconscious, which no one saw coming just 2 years ago or less than 2 years ago. It's pretty amazing what he's been able to do. And I think, you know, people should be looking forward to that fight, because you're going to see if Beck, you know, if Beck the Bully can come back from that. I mean, he's won all of his fights since then and everything, but that's an interesting fight though. So
you touched on Gilberto Ramirez. Obviously, within the last couple of months, him and Rosado were supposed to fight in Long Beach, California, over here in the Los Angeles area. Ramirez obviously didn't make weight, had some weight issues, so got scrapped. That's when I believe Hesta and JoJo got elevated to the main event. Have you heard anything after that, when in terms of Ramirez, you know, is it a weight cut? Should we expect maybe a leveling up to cruiserweight? I mean, have you heard anything?
He swears that he can still make light heavyweight. He's a big guy, of course, so he's 6'2" or whatever he is. He swears that he can make light heavyweight. He was just going through some personal issues that really, there's no excuse for what he did though. I mean, supposedly he was 189 pounds or something on the day they were supposed to weigh in, or the night before they were, it was something crazy like that. So it's not like he was only a few pounds overweight. I mean, it was just, I don't know what he thought was going to happen. I don't know if he thought Gabe Rosado was, who's really, Gabe Rosado is a, not even really a super middleweight, forget a, you know, a light heavyweight, but he was moving up for the fight. I don't know if he just thought he was going to, they're friends. I mean, they've sparred together a lot and everything. So maybe he just thought that he would fight him anyway. I'm not really sure. It was wildly unprofessional what he did. And, you know, he pretty much knows that if he does that again, he's going to have his contract, his promotional contract terminated. I would think he knows that. He says that he can still make 175. So I guess they just have to give him the opportunity again to get down to that weight and see what happens. But if he comes in overweight again, you know, if he does this, I'm not saying it'll be close to 190, but let's just say he doesn't make 170, say the contract weight is 176, 177, whatever it might be, and he doesn't make weight again. Do you want to be in this business anymore? I mean, that's really a question that they would have to ask him.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Rounding off the card, Elijah Garcia, 14-0, goes up against Kevin Salgado Zambrano, 15-1-1. And also this upcoming Saturday from the Cardiff International Arena in Cardiff on DAZN, Rocky Moff, 17-0-1, goes up against Joe Cordina for the IBF Super Featherweight Championship of the World. What do you think about this matchup, Keith? And then who do you think is the best super featherweight in the world today?
Well, Rakhimov's pretty good. I'll say that, you know. Joe Cordina obviously won the title in very impressive fashion, and then he got injured. So let's see what – I don't think he's the puncher necessarily that his championship win made it seem like he is. But he is fighting at home. So that's a very interesting fight. It's going to be a very tough fight for Cordina. Rakhimov is an impressive guy. I mean, I thought that he should have won the fight against Jojo Diaz. However long it was, last year, I think it was almost over a year ago. I think Rakhimov, I would favor Rakhimov in that fight. I mean, I would have to favor him. But an interesting fight though, especially, you know, something earlier in the day, you know, you got this huge pay-per-view event at night. And if you're like a real hardcore boxing fan, that's a pretty good fight to kick off the day earlier in the day from the UK.
Absolutely. And also news and notes of this week's episode of The Last Round. American and British boxing officials are among the leaders of a breakaway group launched last week, last Thursday specifically, with the aim of saving boxing's place in the Olympics. The new federation to be called World Boxing is a rival to the 77-year-old International Boxing Association, which has been suspended from organizing the sport at the Olympics amid longstanding concerns about fair judging and the IBA's ties to Russia. If you had to guess, Keith, are we going to see boxing in the next Olympics?
I think we'll see it in the next Olympics, but I mean, good luck to any organization that's trying to band together and end corruption when you have every nation in the world involved in this. I mean, it's almost impossible to police in a certain way. At least they're trying to do something about it. I guess you could say that, but I wouldn't expect it to be removed from the next Olympics. That's the short answer, I think. But how do they go about cleaning up? How do they do it? Because some of the scoring that you see in amateur boxing is just befuddling. I mean, you think the scoring is bad at the professional level, which sometimes it is. At the amateur level, it really reeks of corruption sometimes, and they just need to do a better job of cleaning up sport and really having some significant consequences when something is amiss. And they really haven't done a great job of doing that internationally.
And then Jake Paul and UFC, I guess, legend, if you want to call him, Nate Diaz, have announced an official bout in the next couple months as well, a boxing match. I think it's going to be a pay-per-view on DAZN. Keith, do you now at this point take somebody like Jake Paul seriously in the boxing game, or does he still have something to prove?
Well, he still has something to prove, but I take him seriously in the sense that he does, you know, he's committed to learning the sport. I was actually surprised that he lost to Tommy Fury. I expected him to win that fight based on what I had seen of Jake Paul in the several fights before that and what I had seen of Tommy Fury. I thought Paul was going to win. So Tommy Fury proved me and probably a lot of other people wrong. I thought he definitively won that fight. But I wouldn't – look, I think some of the shine is off of Jake Paul because he has lost. But they'll still make some money off of this fight because Nate Diaz is a transcendent UFC, former UFC fighter. I don't think they'll do the type of business that Tommy Fury and Jake Paul did. But look, if it's not harming anyone, it's kind of what I said when he was fighting on Showtime pay-per-view. You know, as long as it's not cutting into the budget for real fights, you know, and preventing real fights from happening, I don't see the harm in it all that much. If you don't like it and you don't want to see it, don't pay $50 or $60 or whatever it costs and just ignore it.
In the business world, and also the combat sports world, the parent company of the UFC Endeavor and the WWE are combining. They've already had interviews about it and has to go through regulatory approval and all that. So Keith, with that happening, and assuming that it all gets finalized through regulatory means and all that, can you see Endeavor jumping into the boxing space in the next couple of years?
There have long been rumors about, you know, UFC investors and, you know, getting involved in boxing, but it's never happened for one reason or another. I don't know. I mean, boxing is such an unregulated mess that I don't know that they would want to get, you know, remember, in the WWE is scripted entertainment, so that's on an island unto itself. But UFC, I mean, they have a monopoly over the MMA market for the most part. And whatever they want to happen happens, right? I mean, in boxing, which is part of probably why Dana White hasn't really gone into boxing, despite repeatedly saying he will, is because he has no control over anything. You know, it's a fractured sport from a platform standpoint, from a promotional standpoint. You're not just going to come in and start telling people who've been doing this for, in Bob Arum's case, 60 years, or you're not going to start telling them what to do. And because you say it doesn't work that way. And it might not just, the juice just might not be worth the squeeze from that standpoint. And that might be what prevents them from getting into the sport.
Well, Keith, we definitely appreciate your time here on the Last Round podcast. You're definitely you've been around the sport for many, many years, covering it as a professional journalist. And we obviously appreciate especially a lot of the hardcore boxing fan base recognize you and your work over the years. Before we let you go, Keith, go ahead and let people know. Obviously, a lot of people know who you are in the boxing circles, but just in case there's that one or two listeners who maybe are hearing you for the first time here, let them know where they can find you and follow you.
I appreciate it, Danny. Yeah, my my Twitter feed is just my last name, IDEC Boxing. So it's IDEC Boxing at IDEC Boxing. And you can read my work every day on boxingscene.com. You know, we churn out the content at a pretty rapid pace, as I'm sure most people know. But yeah, and we'll have a lot of stuff up on Fight Week this week. We're covering Fight Week all week there in Vegas for the Tank Garcia fight. Should be a fun week, great event. You know, boxing needs more events like this. And hopefully this will be not only a great event, but hopefully it'll turn out to be a great fight in the ring.
Keith, are you do you have a team from Boxing Scene covering the Tank Davis, Ryan Garcia event, or is it just you solely?
We'll have our video guy, Ryan Burton, who lives in Las Vegas, will be there as well. He, you know, he does some writing for the site too. He does a great job with our video content. He'll be there. You know, our boss, you know, guy who runs the whole operation, Rick Reno, lives in Las Vegas. He'll probably be out there for an event or two. And then we have our correspondents. They'll be writing shoulder pieces about the event as well during the week. So yeah, we're gonna have a ton of content on the fight, and yeah, it should be a great week, guys. And I appreciate the kind words too. It's appreciated, especially when on the Twitter space, you know, or in the Boxing Scene comments section, you see some of the things, and it's like, geez, man, come on, So I do appreciate the positivity.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. We appreciate that. Mike, before we completely sign off here, go ahead and let our listeners know once again where they can find us and follow us.
We are at the Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the Davis-Garcia fight and then probably have a guest, because I don't think there's anything to preview next week. I think it's a rare week off, Keith.
Oh, silent
yeah,
week.
So yeah, we have a couple of open weekends, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We have a couple of those a year. Not too many, but... we're definitely a year-round sport over here, so definitely we are. So once again, to our guest of the week and BoxingScene.com's Keith Idek, from my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.